You have to surround yourself with people who do have that culture. If you surround yourself by other people who don't have a legitimate soccer first household or heritage rather, and are obsessed with it, you're never going to grow. You have to surround yourself with hardcore soccer people. And I'm sorry, your MLS buddies who are season ticket holders to the Seattle Sounders or whatever, that is not hardcore soccer. That's a clown show. You need to surround yourself with people who don't fucking who shit on MLS. That's a great signal, by the way. If you're a person who shits on MLS, but are hardcore soccer, right? You follow something else outside MLS. That's a good signal that should be your friend. And that's somebody to surround yourself with. Next question. Yeah. Hey, this is episode 402 of the 343 podcast. I start this one with an epic rant on the state of the U.S. men's national team. What did we have to learn here in the past FIFA window when we played against Australia? I have been waiting, guys. I have been waiting patiently after that match to see if anybody in the media, if anybody in the fan base would come to appropriate good conclusions. I'm still waiting. And so that is the source of the rant. You don't want to miss it because you can't get it out there. You're only going to get it here. After that, Benny gets into practical matters. He asked me about coaching development because here in the States, we talk a lot about player development. What do we need to do to develop players, to do it the right way so that we can develop world-class players or international caliber players or proper pros? But nobody really talks about coaching development. Yeah, sure, there's a couple things here and there. Oh, we need them to get their licenses. Oh, we need more education. Fly them over to France to go to the National Training Center in France. Nonsense, all nonsense. So we go down that practical rabbit hole as to what I think and what I'm pretty sure of needs to happen in terms of coaching development. How can a coach actually develop themselves to get up to the higher levels of competency? For coaches, per usual, get your butts over to 343coaching.com and sign up right away. That way you can start with the training activities that have been proven to work, not just for the players, not just for the team, but for your own coaching trajectories. We've had countless testimonials over the years of people writing into me saying, Gary, oh my God, I've been a 343 member for 1, 2, 3, 5 years, however long it happens to be for a particular coach. And they tell me their success stories, whether it's winning championships, whether it's taking the bottom of the table team to the middle of the pack team or middle of the pack team to contending with a title, and of course, career trajectory. So head on over to 343coaching.com and learn from the people who have pioneered a seismic shift here in American soccer over the past couple of decades. Parents, it's the same sort of story for you. You are coaches. Just not coaches necessarily on the field. You are the coaches off the field, which means you have your kids 23 hours of the day or 22 hours of the day, with the other 1 or 2 hours being with your team coach. But what do you do with those 20, 22 hours? You need to be able to mentor and guide them appropriately. For you, you go to 343masterclass.com. That is where we have codified our decades worth of experience here in the American environment at every age group, at both genders, up to and including the better part of 10 years in the professional environment. We've seen countless cycles, folks, countless cycles of kids coming in at 8, leaving at 18, going becoming college players or professional players, and then aging out at whatever the case may be, 30 years of age, 32 years of age, so on and so forth. So we've seen it all. We've codified it all. Parents, you go to 343masterclass.com to get started on that program. Last but certainly not least, if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, I hope you enjoy this one. Here we go.
Before we get into the topic of the day, Gary, I want to give you a chance to make any remarks that you might have on the USMNT. If you don't have any, no problem. But I know you watched the game yesterday. I personally didn't watch the game. I couldn't be bothered to watch a game. I was able to, I was free, but I just not drawn to it, man. You know, a lot of people might be mad to hear that or call me a fake USMNT guy, but it's all good. I don't claim to be a fan of the team. So I want to give you a chance, Gary, because I know you have some thoughts on it.
I mean, nothing's really changed from my perspective, honestly. I think if people have been following us for an extended period of time, they know that what I have been saying for years and years and years is that in the United States, there is really no such thing as an A team, a B team, a C team. And the American fan base and the media have concocted this idea that there is an A team comprised of super outliers, Benny, super outliers, that it's crystal clear that they are the ones who deserve to be on the national team. And everybody else is like such a step below the A team guys. And it's just not true. They're all basically the same type of player. And it couldn't be more clear with the case of like an MLS lifer in Christian Roldan. Okay. Roldan has been on the Seattle Sounders forever. You know, he's 30, 31 years old. I don't keep track of these sorts of things, but in that sort of range. And the guy gets thrown in there. He looks decent. He's okay. I mean, look, do I want him on the World Cup team? No. Do I think he should be playing World Cup games? No. But that's just my taste, you know, because I look for a particular player profile in certain positions. Christian Roldan doesn't fit that mold. And there's other reasons, too. Obviously, he was at fault in the first goal that the U.S. Conceded. That is much more important than the two assists that he made. They were nice assists. That's fine. He did a good job. But if you concede a goal in the World Cup against a global power, let's say you're in the round of 16, round of 32, quarterfinals, whatever, you get punished, right? And your opponent is not going to let you have those assists. You know what I'm saying? The U.S. men's national team isn't going to come back with two goals like they came back against Australia. Australia, look, with all respect to Australia, they're a decent team. They put up an amazing fight against Argentina in the last World Cup, Benny. They really did. They put up a good fight. But it's Australia. And let's be real. If you make the mistake that Christian Roldan made against Australia in that first goal, the game's over. It's over. The U.S. men's national team is down a goal against a global power. It's game over. You can't have this player there. But what's my point here? My point is he came in there. It didn't make a lick of a difference that it was him instead of Tasman, or it was him instead of Musa, it was him instead of Johnny Cardoso, or it was him instead of Tyler Adams. It doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter. Or it's him instead of McKinney. I know McKinney was playing side by side with him, but they're all the fucking same. If there is any sort of difference, it's this big. Look, after the first game against Ecuador, everybody was like, oh shit, it's all about Balogun. Larin Balogun, he is the number nine. He is the chosen one. He should be the number one, the first stringer. Why? Oh, because he scored a goal. And everybody thinks that's the guy. And now this game, who goes in? It's not Balogun. It's Haji Wright that goes in. And he scores two goals. And there were two very nice goals, Benny. Very nice goals. And so now what? You see, there is no big difference between the two players. And there is no big difference between those players and Josh Sargent or Ricardo Pepi. Or insert name here. It could be no-name players. Pick an American number nine that's playing in MLS or in some obscure league that is not even on the radar of the U.S. men's national team. Same level of player. That is the conclusion. If somebody is truly interested in knowing and understanding and discerning football, this is the conclusion that they should have come to by now. If they haven't come to this conclusion, as the kids say nowadays, you don't know ball. And it's just a fact.
Yeah, Gary. I noticed in the last friendly you posted, I think maybe at halftime or after the game, that one thing that you did notice about the team is that it seems like the team brought more energy, or the guys didn't feel like their spot is secure, right? Versus in past games, this whole notion of everybody says that this is the A team and those guys felt a sense of entitlement, right? So have you seen a little bit of shift in maybe Pochettino is on these guys saying, fucking nobody's secure. You better be playing your balls off every game. Have you noticed that?
1,000,000%. And that is the big difference between having a legitimate top-class manager and having a bozo there. A bozo does not have the confidence or the pedigree or the respect of players such that he can just not call players. not call him to camp or just not call him to explain himself and say, oh, hey, Weston, I'm not calling you because, you know, I want to see other guys in the position and I'm trying to fuck you. You don't get a phone call from me. You don't deserve a fucking phone call. So this is what Pochettino has said, and or it came out through the grapevine, that he's not communicating with the players that he's not calling up, or he's not communicating with the players that he does call up. And it was kind of admitted, I think, from Pochettino or the technical staff one way or another. Yeah. What do you think this is? You think this is AYSO rec stuff? We need to call up a professional player who's 25 years old. He's been a pro for 7-8 years. I need to call him and make excuses as to why you are or aren't calling them, or why you are putting him in this position or in that position, or checking up on them. Hey, how are you doing? Is everything okay there at Milan or at Juve? Fuck you. Like, what is this? So when you have a coach with this sort of cachet and you don't have to coddle your players, the players start getting properly insecure, like, oh shit, like, where do I actually stand with this guy? This is a good thing, Benny. This is a good, and it's the best thing that has ever happened to the U.S. men's national team program since Klinsmann, because I know Klinsmann also wasn't being a bitch with his players. He was saying, Landon Donovan, you want to take a little vacation, a little, oh, my mental health, and not to, look, people are going to fucking try to cancel me. Gary, a problem, their mental health is a real thing. Shut the fuck up, okay? The player didn't want to show up for the national team duty and take a break for God knows how long. Maybe it was an entire year or something. Okay, you're cut. You're out. You're done. People had a cow. That is a proper U.S. men's national team manager. Nobody here is Messi. Nobody here is Neymar. Nobody here is Ronaldinho. Nobody here is Iniesta or Xavi or name world-class player X or Holland or whatever. Nobody here in the U.S. men's national team is that. Nobody deserves that sort of entitlement. You don't deserve communication. Earn your spot. Weston McKennie throughout the entire... I'm going off, Benny. Weston McKennie throughout the entire Berhalter era did whatever the fuck he wanted on the field, off the field, fucking around, eating Twinkies and donuts and ballooning up to 280 pounds, didn't give a fuck, dyed his hair like a dumbass, you know? No, we take this shit seriously here. And you see it in his body language in the game against Australia. He didn't look like somebody who's fucking around. He looked like somebody who was there for business. And even in the press conferences or things leading up to and post, he wasn't his normal don't give a care in the world sort of self. He was more business-like. That is what the U.S. men's national team needs and requires. I'll say one more thing, Ben. So Christian got a little hurt, came out, you know, before the first half ended, apparently some sort of hamstring stuff. I still see some fans out here talking about, oh, see, it's a wise, he shouldn't show up for these friendly games. Like, he should just say no to that. Fuck you. What do you mean you don't respond to the national team, come play these quote unquote friendly games? You don't get it. They don't get it, Benny. If the guy gets injured, he gets injured. Fine. This is football. That's sport. There is no entitlement here. You show up, you work your balls off. You don't go 80% to preserve yourself at 60%. You go 100%. If you get hurt, you get hurt.
Yeah, Gary. I'm glad that we have a manager like this. Now, I'm assuming you saw Pochettino's little dig on Instagram. He posted to his story. It's like a whiteboard and it says culture, eat strategy for breakfast or something like that. Basically, a call out to the past fucking 10 years of U.S. soccer, how we haven't had a culture in. There's been that whole sense of entitlement from all the players. I mean, I think this is exactly what we needed, bro. And I'm glad that the U.S. won right before almost the World Cup, because now at least Pochettino has a little bit of breathing room from the fans, right? Because, Gary, I think the support of the fan base is massive, not only for the coach, but for the team as well. Because if you're going into it with everybody saying you guys fucking suck and there's no chance, like, it, you feel it as a manager, you feel it as a player, you know, so At least this win gives them a little breathing room, no?
Yeah, it gives them breathing room. I think, from my perspective, the thing I care most about is the education of the fan base and shutting the mouths of these media Muppets who know fuck all about football. And so when Pochettino performs and does well, his team does well, executes, wins, whatever, it shuts them up for one. And two, it's an opportunity for the fan base to become more educated. Will they become more educated? Some, but at least some is better than none. You feel me? So yeah, when you post culture eats all this stuff for breakfast, it's a reality, Benny. And we as Argentinians have known that forever. Do you think the Argentines, historically speaking, okay, go decades until present day, do you think that individually we're as talented as like the Brazilians or the French? No, actually the reality is no, we're not. Player for player, pound for pound, we are not as talented, Benny. So how do we get results against them? How are we a global superpower? Because of this and culture, one unit will do whatever it takes. You remember the infamous game against Holland, the last World Cup, where Paredes blasts the ball against the Dutch bench. Total disrespect, you know, of the opponent. That shit matters. Or the Mexicans now crying when they lost to Argentina in the U-20 World Cup 2-0. I don't know if you've seen any of these reels or anything at all, but the ones in Spanish are obviously the best ones because they get to speak in their natural language. First off, they're woken up to reality again because Argentina is Mexico's daddy for 30 years, even though Mexico tries to make it sound like there's a rivalry between Argentina and Mexico. I'm like, bitch, there's no fucking rivalry. You guys are fucking scrubs. We own you. Like, we don't even think about you. Like, Argentina's rivals are Brazil, France, Germany. You know, those are rivalry games. Those are clásicos. Mexico? Who the fuck is Mexico? But in certain respects, they wake up because they realize every game that we play them, the Mexicans, that the Argentines do all the dark arts and they're dirty and they'll do whatever it takes to win the game. And that all of that is cultural, Benny. It's cultural. And the Mexicans see the Argentine jersey and they shit their pants, number one. And number two, on the field, they don't have that nastiness to them. They don't have it. They're innocent little children. They get eaten for breakfast, Ben. And so that is what Pochettino is also trying to instill in the American soccer culture. Stop being little pussies. Stop being little naive children rule followers. Oh, the ball, it was 50-50, but I really know that it's their ball, you know, so I'm just not going to go and get the ball and throw it in myself or complain to the referee. I'll just let the referee decide, you know, what the fuck? Or, oh, I'm not going to dive, you know, if I feel contact in the box or here or there, because, you know, that's the wrong thing to do. You know, I'm full of virtue. I'm above that. You're a child. Wake the fuck up. So this is, again, what Pochettino not only instills in the players, I'm sure, in the group, but the entire ecosystem and the media and the fan base who don't fucking get it, who are brainwashed by MLS, they just don't get it, Benny. But maybe some of them are starting to wake up.
Yeah. Last thing on the USMNT, Greg, because I don't want this to turn into a whole episode about the national team, but
yeah,
talk about this culture and how it exists in other countries around the world. How, or is it even possible for the U.S. to attain that level of culture? Because, I mean, we mentioned in the last episode, Gary, you look at England, right? You think about England. England has the football culture, right? They live and breathe it every single day, yet they haven't had the same success on the world stage as a Brazil or a Spain or an Argentina. We're lacking the culture. So how do we get it, Gary?
Lacking, and how long is lacking, that going to take? Lacking the right culture, lacking a winner's culture. Because in England, you can say as much as you want, they have a soccer culture. They have all this history, quote unquote, the best league in the world. They have all this money, all this infrastructure, blah, 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 blah. They're hardcore about soccer over there, but they have the wrong culture. They too are rule-following bitches. because they too, and I'll just give you an example that everybody can relate to. There's many, but one that everybody can relate to because it's commonly known is they are kind of the biggest crybabies about quote unquote cheating or the dark arts. Oh, look, he dives all the time. What a bitch, you know, get up, Neymar, you pussy. You know what I'm saying? This is a man sport. You know, this isn't Hollywood. Okay, that's proof positive. You're a loser. You are not willing to do what it takes to win. And you think it's virtuous. Oh, I'm a gentleman. I eat correctly. I know how to drink tea properly and set the teacup at the proper spot with the proper spacing with the fork and knife right there. And I know how to use my white tablecloth to clean my mouth, you know, like the Queen of England. They have this... That is part of the culture, Ben. That coupled with a terrible, terrible suboptimal footballing philosophy of how to play, you can't win. It's over. We'll eat you every fucking time. So the US, yeah. Same shit, Ben. Same exact shit. We are the children of England and we take our cues from England. We have the same language. We have the same customs. We have the same rule-following bitches around. Nobody's above the law sort of thing. So they take that to the football field. Nobody's above the law of the game. All right. And by the way, we have to be direct. Rondos suck. They're not directional. Soccer is all about directional stuff. Go, 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 go. Okay. Be a loser the rest of your life. Nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change until we inject a meritocracy in this country where a legit competition of ideas can take place and let the best ideas reign supreme.
Yeah, but Gary, okay, I understand you're saying that England's missing that element of the dark arts of football, right? But you just said nothing's going to change in the US until we implement this meritocratic system. They have that in England. So is it implement the system and also implement the proper culture behind it? Are those the two key factors?
No. The power structure has to be open to competition to be taken over. Over there, it's so ingrained for 100 years, Ben, and couple that with what the Premier League has transformed itself into, where you basically import all of the players. You're now importing all of the coaches and you don't have the actual English people being infused and learning the code or given the opportunity anymore. So who are the English coaches in the Premier League? I couldn't name you one. I'm sure there are, and it shows my ignorance to that topic, but who are the English? I can't name you a proper English coach that's actually successful and doing great stuff and doing things that actually lead to winning. Who are the best English players in the Premier League? I mean, I guess there are some, but it's not that impressive to me. And how many English players are actually protagonists in their Premier League clubs? Most of the protagonists are non-English players. So you have this import of foreigners who are bringing a better culture to it all, but they themselves aren't assimilating the culture.
Right.
I'll continue this thread. Here in America, we're the quote unquote, the melting pot, right? So we're not homogenous. We have it's a nation of immigrants. So the different cultures are already entrenched in our country. That's different than from England. In our country, the United States, we do have Mexican culture. We do have Hispanic American cultures. We do have European cultures. We do have huge Italian populations. All the populations are already here thinking the way that they think. They just need to have the opportunity of rising up, be it owning clubs, be it players, be it coaches, be it whatever. So that's the distinction. Over there, they don't have that, Ben.
Yeah. So what you're saying is if the system were to open here in the US, we could pull from within our own people. Within our own cultures.
Absolutely.
In England, they're bringing in talent from other countries. And that's why they're not deeply successful at the national team because it's not in their roots.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's not from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. I won't ask you what's what's the solution to England's problems? Because, you know, fuck them.
I already told you that. Their whole philosophy, of how to play is fucked. I mean, it's gotten better, which is why they've had a little bit more success at the youth level, and their senior team is having better players now with Jude Bellingham. Like, if you look at Jude Bellingham, how he plays, he doesn't play like an English player. He literally plays more like a Spaniard or Italian.
Yeah. All right, Gary. I like it, dude. You're buzzing tonight. I like it. Let's hop into the topic that I have prepared, Gary. We talked a couple episodes about what is the pathway for a coach to rise in the ranks in this country. But we mentioned that we saved this for another episode. How do you actually develop as a coach, right? We already talked about, okay, if you want to get elevated, you have to, you know, kiss the ring, lick the boot. You have to say all the right things, present yourself in a certain way. Take all your U.S. soccer license courses. But how can one actually, ignore all that? How can you actually develop as a coach and become a good practitioner of the game?
Yeah.
You know, I think maybe let's just start with, first of all, I think the biggest thing for a coach, especially if they're just starting out, is establishing your own philosophy and your own vision and the way that you want to play. How do you do that, Gary? Especially if you're new to the game and your references, like let's say a coach who's never played before, when all he's known his whole life is MLS. How does this guy start and come up with his own identity or his own philosophy in the way that he wants to play?
Huge topic, Benny. I'm glad you brought it up. Huge topic and very complex topic, because just like if you were to ask the question of how do you develop a player, or how can a player develop themselves? And my answer and everybody's answer should always be like, well, it depends. You know, how old is the player? What's their home environment like? Where do they live? You know, what's their current level? You have to take in all these factors, and then you come up with a development plan. I think the same applies to coaches, Benny. It's kind of like every piece of advice, for instance, as to how to develop them, first has to start with an assessment of the particular context of a coach. Okay, who are you? How old are you? What's your history with football? Who have your mentors been? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you put them on a proper development path. That said, that's not very helpful. So we have to talk in generalities at this point. So in general, the first thing is, you should look at the best teams in the world and what is it that they look like? How do they play? That's a big rabbit hole in and of itself to assess how do they play and what are the constituent components of how they play? Because every team, even if they're world-class World Cup contenders all the time, they're the dominant powers of the world, they all play differently. Barcelona does not play the same way as Real Madrid, and they're due to global gold standard world-class teams. Argentina does not play the same way as Brazil does. And the same thing applies to them. They're both world-class global heavyweight contenders year in and year out. So you have to deconstruct that. So you start there. What are the best teams in the world? You look at them and you're like, okay, I think I want to model myself after this team. I, in particular, think that a good base to develop a coach is looking at Spain and Pep's Barcelona. Why? Because that is a model that introduces the least amount of chaos into your team. It is a philosophy backed by a methodology that enables control of the game. And once you have and understand the underpinnings of how to, quote unquote, control a game with possession, then you can layer in or inject chaos afterwards. But if you start with chaos, you're like, oh, I like the way that, I don't know, what's a chaotic team kind of? Maybe, I mean, relative to Barcelona, maybe you can say Real Madrid could be more chaotic because they're so direct. Or you can look at Marcelo Bielsa's teams. So Marcelo Bielsa's teams, for instance, you look at Uruguay or you look at Chile in particular, historically, it looks like just a million miles per hour, super direct, super vertical at all times. That has a a tremendous amount of chaos associated with it from an outsider's perspective. So you don't want a coach who is looking to develop to have a lot of chaos happening on the field then. You with me? You with me? So what did I come up with, or we came up with collectively to do our coaching education? We said, hey, we want to possess like Barcelona. We want to counterattack like Real Madrid. So two different components. And we want to press or pressure the opponent like Bielsa's Chile. So those are your three sort of guiding principles. And then obviously you have to have activities to train the team with to enact those three guiding principles. So that's step one, Ben, is coming up with a vision. How do you want to play? And I would recommend coming up with a vision that is ordered and structured versus chaos.
Yeah, Gary, yeah. Because I can already hear a lot of the comments. At what age do you start playing like that? Because think about it, if a coach is just starting and he's coaching his son's U8 team, right? Are you going to train him to play like Barcelona and press like Madrid? People in the comments are going to be like, fuck you, Gary. Like, let him play, bro. Let him dribble. And, you know, so what's the proper age where, because again, dude, if you're just starting out, U7, U8, we brought this up many times, is have the kids enjoy the game, right? But as it gets more serious, what do you think is a good starting point for that type of system, Gary? Is it U8, U9, U10?
Yeah, I would say maybe U10 is probably the safest bet. We can go earlier, you know, obviously because Brian knows what he's doing. I know what I'm doing. You know what you're doing. So you can kind of deploy this stuff earlier than U10 and make it work, not just from the team perspective, but from the individual player development perspective. But maybe somebody who's not as experienced, Benny, you have to start maybe a little bit later, but not too late, Ben, either. Because once you get into like U13, let's say, for an inexperienced coach in particular, the game already has gone fast enough that the coach is not equipped to know what he's, to see what's happening and how to make adjustments and know what they're doing. So that's from an age perspective. And then obviously there's a level perspective, because if you have a U13 team that is rec or very low level, okay, the game's not that fast, so you're fine. But if you have a top level U13 team, it's probably going to be relatively fast compared to your coaching capability. By the way, this is why I preface the whole thing, Ben, of every coach, we'd have to assess them. Where are they at? What age groups are you coaching? What's your background like? And then you come up with a coaching development plan for them.
Yeah. Okay. In a bit, Gary, I'm going to give you a John Doe coach that I think is probably the most common, or where the most coaches are trying to learn at that point. But before we get into that, and this is obviously a question for Brian, Gary, but how does Brian become Brian? I mean, the work that he produced in the last 15 years, no doubt that he's one of the best in the country, you know, but obviously he didn't just wake up one day and now he's this phenomenal coach. So I don't know, Gary, maybe you can just give me a two to three minute rundown of what it took for Brian to be at that level. Because even when he started with Rage, Gary, he was way higher level than people that have been doing it for 20 to 30 years. So how does Brian become Brian?
Yeah, it's not a mystery, because it's not restricted just to soccer and just to Brian. This is what I'm going to say next is a truism across any walk of life. It's obsession. If you're obsessed for a long period of time, the amount of knowledge accumulation that you accrue is outrageous. Outrageous. And people just won't be able to match you, or won't be able to catch up to you even. So imagine, if you want to keep it in the context of Brian, fine. Imagine you have a 5-year-old kid or a 6-year-old kid, and they're watching soccer games religiously. They're watching Argentina every time that there's an Argentina game. They're taping it on a VHS recorder, all the international games, all the World Cup games, all the Copa America games, all the Euro games. It's all recorded. And from the age of 5 or 6 to the age of, I don't know, when he got his first coaching gig, I think he was maybe 19 years old when he got his first coaching gig, something like that, because he was playing U19 soccer, and then he aged out, And then that team continued for another year, and the parents and everybody wanted him to be the coach of the team. So imagine from age 5 or 6 until the age of 19, you have watched thousands of football matches, but not just watched like a spectator or a fan watches, Benny. It's studying. It's literally watching the game and then pausing the film, rewinding the film, going over the last, 10 second sequence because you think you saw something, you think you saw a pattern, or you want to watch this play over and over again. You want to watch this move that this particular player did over and over again. So imagine for the course of 13 years, age 6 to age 19, you're doing this for thousands of games and 10,000 hours or more cumulative. And then you can take your first coaching gig, right? And you've been listening to press conferences religiously of all the world-class managers, like, and you've been reading the papers, not just, well, not even, forget American papers. You're reading the overseas papers because we're bilingual too, Benny. That's a huge help to coaching development too. If you know more than one language, huge, huge. So he's reading all the Argentine papers, sports papers, every week, over and over and over again. What did the journalist, what did this coach say? What did that club president say? What were the results? Who scored? Who assisted? Every week, Benny, for 13 years, age 6 to age 19. So you get your first coaching gig at age 19. Compare that to whoever else here in America gets their first coaching gig. That other person is so far behind in soccer knowledge, you're never catching up. It ain't happening, Benny. And then you actually become a practitioner. Okay, so it's a different beast having knowledge and all this stuff versus doing it on the field. So the other component is also being able to be a great communicator. And I think a lot of being a great communicator had to do with my mom being a teacher of profession for a long time in Argentina. And then us being children, she would literally sit with us for hours a week or whatever. And I don't know, kind of be like a teacher to us and be a tutor to us. Oh, you need help with your math? You sit down, do your math. I hated it, right? Because I'm being forced to do homework. But she would force us to do the homework and sit with us and teach us. So I'm sure some of that stuff seeped in to us, right? So coaching is a teaching gig. And then the third, he's very empathic. So he has a lot of empathy for other human beings. He cares about other human beings. He knows how to put himself in the shoes of other human beings. So put all that shit together, Ben, and you have the ingredients for magic to happen, plus work ethic, because you can't stop working.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the point about communication here, because I also wanted to bring up personality, right? And you mentioned Brian was obsessed with the game. Okay. I have a lot of friends that have been obsessed with the game for 15 years, and they can name all these stats and every player on every team. But if you put them on the field, they'll be fucking shocking as a coach, bro. You know?
Yeah.
You have to have that, the personality, gravitas? Is that how
gravitas.
You have to have that. Otherwise, the players aren't going to respond to you. And getting buy-in from the players, I think that's, Brian's a master of that, you know, because after day one of a session or day two, the team will fucking go to war for that man. They'll die on a hill for him, and anything that he says, they're bought into it, you know. So not only did he have the obsession, but he also had the personality, and he also had that kind of the charm that you need to be a coach on the field, because that's a big part of it too. You know, you can be obsessed with it. You can know every little detail about the game, that if you don't have that personality, you're not going to make it very far.
Yeah, it's all connected, Benny. Because, well, first I would, look, I want to be respectful, but I would question whoever you think your friends are who are obsessed and have a lot of knowledge. I would say, no, they don't. It's just a completely different class. Maybe they have a shit ton of knowledge and are obsessed relative to the average monkey here in the United States, but relative to what we're talking about, relative to us, relative to Brian, it's a clown show. I would look and like, you're a clown. With respect, maybe I'm wrong. Okay. It's just a different level. Secondly, I think that outlier level of knowledge gives you an outrageous amount of confidence. And confidence is a key ingredient to be able to communicate with that gravitas. That's the word that you wanted to use, Benny. If you in your head think, I actually don't have that much knowledge, I'm insecure, I'm actually a fraud, you know, I'm faking it till I make it sort of thing, you're not going to be able to communicate with your players, with your colleagues, with confidence. People smell this, Ben. They smell it, okay? So like one leads to the other in a lot of sense. You have to have the underlying wealth, reservoir of expertise and competence to be able to be that charismatic leader. And the other ingredient too is, look, I don't know if our audience, you know, what their interaction with Argentines are, or if they've read much about Argentinian culture or the Argentinian people, but we're all kind of like walking Zlatan Ibrahimovic's over there. Okay. We all think we're the shit. Okay. And we all think we're lions and everybody else is a sheep. And that cultural posture also is very contagious and leads to you being able to lead an army and command an army too. So Brian obviously has that, the Argentinian. And the Mexicans, who are crying like little babies now, who lost 2-0 to Argentina in the U-20 World Cup a few days ago, they also, everybody starts saying this stuff when they lose to Argentina. The Colombians said it, the Chileans said it, now the Mexicans are saying it. It's like, yeah, the Argentines just have that extra gear that is from up here that we just don't have.
Yeah. Okay. When I brought up my friends, I know clearly that they don't have the same expertise as Brian, but just to make a point that if you don't have also the personality, then
yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, Gary. So, okay. I said I was going to come up with like an average guy or the most common coach that I see. So a lot of former players are just fresh out of college. They start coaching, right? They're new to the scene, never coached before, maybe even if they played all their life. How do you run a proper training session? Because I know when I started coaching here, even though the 343 coaching education platform was there, but I didn't have access to it yet. So in my head, it was like, all right, I'm just going to try and remember everything that my former coach did, everything that Brian did, right? But I feel like now in today's day and age, Gary, most coaches will just go to YouTube, right? And just type in, like, even for example, you said, okay, I want to model my team after Barcelona. You type in, all right, Barcelona training exercise or Man City training exercise. How do you become a master of the training session, Gary?
Yeah, you're fucked. If you're doing that, you're fucked. I get it. You have to search for information. And if
right, you don't have anything.
Yeah. And if you don't see, this is the biggest problem. I just got messaged on X a couple of days ago. Hey, Gary. And I get this once in a while. Hey, Gary, why don't you have like, talk about goalkeepers on the podcast? It'd be great. You know? And I imagine this guy is, you know, obviously is invested in goalkeepers one way or another. And I told him the same thing that I've told everybody for 15 years publicly. Like, I don't feel like I have the expertise in goalkeeping to be able to talk about it. And so he's like, well, yeah, well, maybe you can get somebody that, you know, you respect or think is good for goalkeeping on the episode. And then, you know, because you vouch for them, then I'll be paying close attention. And it leads to your question, Ben. I can't even do that because I don't think I have the expertise to be able to discern who is a legit goalkeeper coach or knows a lot about goalkeepers versus anybody else. So you kind of need expertise to identify who are the legit ones. So going to what you're saying, that you're a new coach, you're the John Doe, and you want to learn how to play, and you look up on YouTube, I want to play like Barcelona, you look up you. Like, you are understandably blind out there trying to, and you have no concept of what are good sources of information. Who are the true experts out there? What is actually applicable to your situation? What is not? You have no idea. So you start on this trial and error cycle that can last you years. You can last 5, 7, 10, 15 years of you trying different shit. And eventually, maybe by accident, you'll discover some truths of the game and you'll converge on certain activities that you start doing religiously because you had this one success with this one team, one time for a season or whatever. And like, this shit seems to be working, so I'm going to keep doing some of this. But you also have no idea whether you've converged to, in mathematics, what's called a local maximum or a local minimum. And that actually, what you're doing actually is shocking. It's not great. It's certainly not the best, but you have no way of identifying that. So what do you do then, Ben? What do you do? That's your ultimate question. It's a great mystery. It's very difficult, dude. I would, you know, one of my suggestions is look for mentors or people or sources of information that you can sniff out, hopefully, who are truly authentic and speak their mind no matter what the repercussions, that won't fluff you, you know, either to make a connection or make a relationship or sell you a product or service. They won't fluff you. They don't give a fuck. They're just going to tell you how it is. End of story. So that's usually a good signal that somebody is an expert, because experts and masters, they don't have time for the politics and all that shit. They don't give a fuck about that. It's just straight to the heart of the matter. Do you want to know? Yes or no? I will tell you. You don't want to know? You want to pussyfoot around or you think that you know stuff? I'm not wasting my time with you. Game over. It goes for every field. I remember when my mom got very sick many, many, many years ago. Very serious situation. And I was young. You know, I had just graduated college and I became her caretaker, going to all the doctor's appointments, doing all this stuff. And that's all I could apply to is the doctors, in my estimation, the doctors who were very open about things like, hey, Gary, hey, you know, Gary's mom, what questions do you have? I'm an open book. Ask me anything you want and I'm going to answer you. That's usually a good signal too, versus the doctors who are very skittish when you ask questions or when you question them or what about this or what about that? And they just kind of shut it down and want to walk out of the room, right? That is usually the sign of a fraud. So I don't know, aside from things like that, Ben, necessarily, I would have to write up something more in detail, because there are signals as to how do you go about seeing who is real and who is not.
Yeah.
It's key.
Yeah, for sure. I feel really lucky, Gary, to kind of have Brian as a mentor, right? Somebody to look up to and somebody to kind of craft the way that I want to coach my teams. And he was a big influence for me, but I feel for the coaches that one, don't have a mentor, or two, maybe they think they have a mentor and their mentor is absolutely shocking, right? That's the hard part, dude, because especially if you're new to coaching, even if you've been a player your whole life, being a player and being a coach is two completely different things, right? So you can just have finished your playing career and you start coaching and you think you found this great mentor, but he's actually doing you more damage than he is good. So finding the right mentor also is key, man.
Yeah, massive damage. Something that I've repeated ad nauseum, and I'll repeat it again because it's critical. One other way of identifying online from a distance who might be legit and who might not be legit is if you come across a coach that's giving advice or selling courses or programs, they better have an extensive video library of their own teams with their own players over extended period of time, years, executing remarkable football, and not just cherry picked little clips here or there, because every coach and their mom over the course of many years can find themselves 5 moments out of thousands of hours of video to, like, because their team, you know, put 5 passes together and scored a goal, right? No. Extensive video library, full length matches, right, of the team playing. They better have that, because if they don't have that and they're out here running their mouth about football and all that, that's probably a fraud, Benny, honestly speaking. So that is step number one in identifying who might be legitimate, who might not be legitimate. Do not rely on credentials, especially for American-based soccer coaches. It is the worst thing you can do is rely on credentials. Oh, well, this guy coached in, you know, at an MLS Academy or an MLS Next or an ECNL. Doesn't mean shit here, because there's no meritocracy here. That those coaches could have just been gifted those jobs, probably were gifted those jobs. So that is the worst thing you could do. Oh, this coach has an A license. Look, it says on his Twitter bio or X, or this coach has a UEFA B or UEFA Pro. worst thing you can do is look for credentials. Terrible, terrible. And it's a negative indicator, Benny. If a coach is placing their licenses on their social media profiles, that is a negative indicator that they are actually legitimate. Negative, because they feel the need, they have to put a credential on there. Legitimate masters, experts, they don't put their credentials on their social media profiles because they don't have to, Ben.
I'm glad you brought up credentials, Gary, because I wanted to ask you about that. Is there any value, Gary, besides unlocking doors for you, right? Is there any value in taking, let's start with, U.S. soccer coaching courses. Is there any value to be had by taking those courses? And then on top of that, right, I know you just said don't rely on coaches that put that in their bio and stuff, but what about a coach that just wants to learn more, right? Let's say he goes to a UEFA course, or I know like even Barcelona has a coaching course that you can take online. Is there value to that type of stuff?
I mean, there's so many ways to answer that question. Here's one way. Is there value to a player spending countless hours juggling the soccer ball? Yeah, there's value to it. Is it going to make you a pro or a world-class player or something? No. Is it required? No, not really. If you look at all these freestyle jugglers out there, they're better jugglers than Messi. Way better jugglers than Messi. Messi can't do a flip and land on his back and keep juggling upside down with the soles of his foot or whatever. Can't do that. There are people who can play, the Pana game that your brother loves so much, and they'll destroy Messi in that game. Messi has no chance. Doesn't mean shit. But is there value to it? Sure, there's value to it. Is there value to me having a nice little sip of whiskey right now? I mean, on the whole, it's not good for you. Is there value to it? Sure. There's pros to it also, just like many cons. So is there value to these coaching licenses and course and stuff? Fine. Yeah, maybe you'll extract some gold nuggets here beyond the, like you said, beyond the networking, the credentialisms and the gatekeeping, doors opening, that sort of stuff. Yeah, but look, let me connect it to your original question of what made Brian special. And I went on this whole tirade that from age 6 to age 19, he probably accumulated 10,000 hours of deliberate practice and deliberate learning. You think because you took the A license for U.S. soccer, which on the whole might be 100 hours of work. I don't know. Maybe it's 100 hours of work total to get that license. Brian put in over 10,000 hours by the time he was 19. You think that a licensed guy got just as much value from his A license than a kid who's 19 who already put in 10,000 hours? No chance, Ben. No chance. But sure, there's value. Have fun. Go have at it. It's not going to make you special. It's not going to really move the needle for you. It really isn't. People will disagree with me. And I get it. There's a lot of sunk costs. Imagine you spend thousands of dollars and you're listening to somebody saying, okay, it means jack shit from a learning perspective. Oh no, well, Gary, the instructor was very good. He came from France and la, 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 la. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, man. A big indicator also, Gary, that it's really a joke, bro, because I'm pretty sure I'm correct. You have to fact check me, but any former pro, like that played in MLS at the end of their career, if they want to start coaching, I'm pretty sure they can just jump straight to the A license course, meaning that they don't need any prerequisites for that. Oh, you're a former pro. Here you go. Here's an A license. Oh, you have an A license. Now you can coach in MLS Next Academy. So I think it just goes to show you like how much of it really is just for gatekeeping purposes to keep the right people in and keep the wrong people out, man.
Yeah, two things on the matter of the value add. The other metaphor I could give or thing to think about is, look, we all know you can go to university and get a bachelor's, you can get a master's, you can get a PhD, whatever. Let's stick with the bachelor's degree. If you stick to the schedule and you pass all your classes, you take a full load, you're done in 4 years, you get a bachelor's degree. But listen, Benny, that's 4 years of quote unquote education. 4 years, countless hours, okay, that you put in. And we all have experience. We all know people who have bachelor's degrees. And how capable are you after you got your 4-year degree? Most of them basically are bartenders or servers or working jobs that have nothing to do with whatever it is that they quote unquote studied. And even the ones who land jobs in what they actually studied, which in the STEM fields, there's a higher success rate of actually getting a job. You know, if you study chemistry, you get a job in chemistry, engineering and engineering physics and engineering. And you see what I'm saying? But when they first get their job after 4 years of work, you're a monkey who knows nothing. You have no skills. You can do nothing. You're a child, not just age-wise, skills-wise, capability-wise. And people are thinking, oh, you get your C license and your B license and your A license, which is a joke compared to 4 years of studying at university, time and intensity-wise. So think about it. Like, are you going to be a good coach? Are you going to be? No, you don't know anything. Utterly incapable, Ben. The other thing about what you said of players getting fast-tracked. Yeah, players get fast-tracked, right, to be able to coach at a high level really quickly. But you said it already, and everybody kind of knows this intuitively too, if not objectively. It's not the same being a player and being a coach, completely two different things. Just to bring it home for folks, everybody in our audience was a student at some point, a student in school. They went through the whole school system. They finished school, whether they finished high school, college, whatever. That doesn't mean you can be a good teacher. Shocking teacher. And how many years is it going to take you to actually become a good teacher? And some never become a good teacher. It doesn't matter how long you do it for.
Really quick, Gary, because I know this is supposed to be about coaches, but any thoughts on the cost of these actual courses for U.S. soccer? I think by the time you get to a license, it's $5,000. And then if you want to take your pro, it's $10,000. So nice. And bro, you're a coach. If coaching is your full-time thing, you're scraping by, bro. You don't have just cash to burn like that. So a lot of coaches are being left out simply because, like, I know a lot of coaches that have gotten their C license and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to go to B because I can't afford it, bro. And I know some clubs will pay for it, but not everybody has that opportunity. So is this cost another? Because Gary, why wouldn't U.S. soccer want as many people educated as possible, right? Is this just another way to keep people out that they don't want?
That's all it is, Ben. That's 100% what it is. It's pay to play, but at the coach level. That's what
pay
it is.
Pay to coach.
That's what it is. So there's only a certain class or type of person, and you all know what I'm getting at here, wink, wink, who have the money, disposable income, to fork out $5,000 or $10,000 or $3,000 or $2,000 and have the free time to travel to wherever these licenses or courses are being held or take time off work or whatever. You have that luxury to do it. It's a certain class in the literal sense of person who is able to do that. So you're literally gatekeeping people out of the higher levels of football, because they also put restrictions for you being able to coach at different levels of soccer in this country. Oh, well, you don't have a C license. Well, I'm at least a C license. Well, I'm sorry. The requirement here is you have to have at least a C license or a B license or an A license or the pro license. It's a filter, Ben. It's a filter. And even if you don't have the money, if you are a chosen one, like you happen to be employed by an MLS franchise or something, well, then the MLS franchise pays for its coach to go and do this thing and get the credential so that they fulfill the requirements of being the coach there at the franchise and stuff. But it's all gatekeeping, Ben. All of it. It's gross. It's gross. I understand having to have a license to practice medicine. People's lives are in your hands, literally. I understand having to have a license to practice law, because again, if there's no license, there's no vetting, there's no at least minimum bar in one way or another, you might be representing people who then have their lives ruined because of you, because you didn't actually go through the vetting process. I can understand demanding a license for being a contractor, constructing homes or buildings or whatever the heck it is, because if there's no vetting process for that, you might cut corners. You might not know what you're doing. Houses collapse on people. People die. I can understand having licenses for, you know, all a myriad of professions, but coaching soccer? Fuck you, coaching soccer. What do you need? There's no public safety hazard if somebody doesn't have a quote unquote license for coaching soccer, Ben. This is not in the public interest. Hey, you want to have a license for that everybody has to pass for CPR or vital things like this? Like, what do you do if a kid or if a player, or, you know, there's some sort of issue at hand? That's fine. But this whole sequence of this is $500 and this is $2,000 and this is $5,000 and this is $10,000. And if you don't meet these little hurdles, you don't get to coach at certain levels. Bro, it's a scam. The whole thing.
It's really sad, bro. Disgusting, like you like to say, bro. I want to put you on the spot here, because, or maybe you've thought about this. You think about everything, bro. But I know you have the five components to player development, right? What would you say are the five components to coaching development? Are they the same or are they different? I know it's putting you on the spot, because with those five components of player development, I mean, you've worked on that for 10 years, basically, right? So now yeah. I'm asking you to do it in 10 seconds.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's a great question. Now I'm going to have to really buckle down and come up with something more formal and clean. But, you know, off the cuff, I think it parallels a lot of the five components of player development. Do you have that open, by the way, or no?
I don't. I think off of my head, it's technical.
Okay, do one at a time. No. Oh, I see. You're thinking about something else. I'm thinking about my five components of player development, which is the household influence.
The household, yeah. That's what I meant. Let me pull it up.
Okay.
All right. So it's you want to go one at a time?
Yeah, go one at a time, because I think the coaching development one off the cuff will probably mirror that very well.
Okay. So it's the household, parent, family influence.
Okay. Stop right there. So absolutely. Let's take Brian, for instance, household family influence, Argentine heritage. As much as people like to think, oh, we're all humans, we're all created equal, and a lot of that is true. Culture matters, Benny. Culture matters. There's a reason why the Russians are amazing chess players. There's a reason why the Koreans are amazing video game players. There's a reason why a lot of the Asian communities are crush it in academics. There's a reason why the Indians crush it in medicine and in entrepreneurship and being CEOs. There's a reason for all these things, okay? So Argentine heritage gives you something in the blood already, having that culture, that household family influence matters. So maybe you're lucky, but maybe you're not so lucky. Maybe you, as a new coach or as a coach, you grew up in a household where soccer was not important, wasn't even registering at all. Maybe it was a NFL household or a basketball household or a baseball household or a hockey household or no sports household at all. You're kind of fucked in this category and it matters. Well, how do you remedy it? Okay. If you didn't grow up in this, you have to surround yourself with people who do have that culture around you. If you surround yourself by other people who don't have a legitimate soccer first household or heritage rather, and are obsessed with it, you're never going to grow. You have to surround yourself with hardcore soccer people. And I'm sorry, your MLS buddies who are season ticket holders to the Seattle Sounders or whatever, that is not hardcore soccer. That's a clown show. You need to surround yourself with people who who shit on MLS. That's a great signal, by the way. If you're a person who shits on MLS, but are hardcore soccer, right? You follow something else outside of MLS. That's a good signal that should be your friend and that's somebody to surround yourself with. Next question.
The playing on your own influence.
Okay. So playing on your own. So obviously this was for players, right? So let's do the coaching, the mirroring of the coaching. So I would say that this would be.
What, you go and coach your friend's Sunday league team or what?
No, well, I was thinking more because this is going to overlap with the other component, which is personal training. I would say being able to go and or take some time to personal train someone or a small group, because that gives you another insight that you don't get when you're team training. You get to engage one-on-one with a player a lot more. You get to understand the psychology of a player a lot more. You get to focus in on the deficiencies and strengths of a player a lot more. You get to deploy ideas as to how to improve them in a specific area a lot more and see whether your ideas are working or are not working and why they are or are not working. So if you do all of that, that obviously helps your development as a coach, even in the team environment.
Yeah, you're going to laugh at this, Gary, and probably tell me I need more friends. But honestly, sometimes, like, especially recently, if I'm watching a game and if I'm by myself, like, let's say I'm watching, I don't know, Liverpool game versus Newcastle, right? I'll say, all right, I'm the coach of Newcastle, right? And I have all my coaching points. And then, like, at halftime, I'm like, all right, what would I be saying to the team? You know, so that is kind of like a way of coaching on your own, you know? Yeah. Even though, like, I feel like a fucking weirdo. I'm like, all right, hey, this gentleman, pick it up, right? You know what I mean?
No, Benny, with what you said, I now take back my explanation. I want to reserve that explanation I just gave you to the other component, which is the personal training component of player development. So let's allocate that's for coaching development, how you can develop yourself in that sense. And I want to adopt yours and add to yours a little bit more with respect to the coaching on your own influence, right? Instead of playing on your own influence. No, because this is true. It reminds me of my childhood and growing up, and to this day, and something that I would do and Brian would do, and we would compare notes, is while watching games, you know, we would literally call out, oh, you know, Bielsa should, you know, take Saviola out and put in this guy right now, you know, because we're analyzing the game. And lo and behold, I mean, 9 times out of 10, 3 minutes later, substitution, you know, and it's the changes that we were predicting would happen. I mean, I'm talking, we were like children, okay, and growing up to modern day. So that's also a little indicator that maybe you know some stuff, some football. The trap that that people can fall into, however, is thinking that you know more than you know when you're getting those sorts of things right, because sometimes it's quite obvious, even from a pedigree perspective and a historical substitution pattern perspective, because if you've seen a game, say the U.S. men's national team forever, okay, you're a fan of the U.S. men's national team, you know who the players are, right? You know who the pedigree guys are, you know what position, you know what I mean? Like, you might fall into this trap, like you actually know what it is that you're doing, but you actually don't know what you're doing. And the other related pitfall is that you have the advantage that you're looking at it from a satellite perspective. I see everything on the TV screen. I see all the movements of the players. I see a wide-angle lens. But you as a coach, you're on the sideline, Ben. You don't have the benefit of seeing the football match like we see it in the stands or on TV. Do you see what I'm saying? So you might be able to identify what needs to happen in the match, but you have a huge advantage over the coach because you're up from this perch.
Yeah, that's a good point. The pickup game influence, Gary.
Ooh. If we've lost the audience here, they're not following what it is that we're doing. Benny, you're listing out the 5 components of player development to maximize their potential that I wrote up. I don't know. It was probably like 10 years ago at this point. You're going one by one, and I'm trying to come up with an equivalent for coaching development. So the one you just mentioned was what? The pickup game influence. So obviously pickup games develop individual players like crazy, and it's hugely important. I don't know what the coaching equivalent of pickup is.
Well, I don't know, dude. I think a lot of coaches still enjoy playing. So I think there is some benefit to still going and play pickup, but maybe now you take on the role of the fucking leader on the field and moving all the pieces, and then you can kind of get a different perspective as to what your players are seeing on the field, you know? So there's some coaches, you know, maybe they have 2 blown out ACLs, so they can't play anymore. But those younger guys that we talked about that are just starting coaches, yeah, dude, if you can find pickup, or, you know, go out there on the field and be the general on the field, command your players, and I think it opens up a different perspective for you.
That's a very, very, you're getting very good at this thing, Ben. That's a very, very good point. No, that's a very good point, because, and you've seen me do that constantly, right? Hop on the field with the players and be a player coach on the field. And you see the professionals doing this all the time. So Simeone or Zidane or Ancelotti, whoever it is, they get on the field during the training session and they show the players what it is that they want them to do. So I think that's huge for coaching development too. Get on the field But hopefully you can kick a ball, Ben. I don't know.
Yeah, we brought this guy up many times on the podcast, but you know Choco. And I told you I joined the Sunday League team, and Choco's not even a coach, but he's still the loudest guy on the field. And like, I'll make a bad touch or something, and this fool's fucking ripping me, bro. We're seeing, yeah, like, hey, fucking Benny, step, you know? I'm like, bark, dude. I need to pick my game up here, but yeah, dude, it's just another example of, I think when you play, you see things differently, you know? Because even when I played in the game on Sunday League, the next week, and I'm like, oh, I remember myself in this moment. Now, how can I translate this and communicate it to my player as to how that they can perform in this situation, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Okay.
Right. The last two, just the structured club training influence.
I mean, that's just the classic coaching.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody, you have a team, and you're coaching your club team, and that's what that is all about. So hopefully the more you do of that, the better you get. But you can't just go through the motions, obviously. You have to have a good methodology and religiously deploy that methodology, and you yourself get better at that methodology over and over, year after year after year, to master the individual activities. See, I just think the general public generally, and many, many coaches in particular, I don't think they appreciate how long it takes as a coach to master, quote unquote, master just one exercise, one activity. Everybody's heard of the 4v1 rondo. I don't think people realize that it's going to take a coach from having never done it. It's going to take them 5 years of doing it every single session for them to finally get to the point where they're like, I get it. And I can really run this activity. 5 bloody years, Benny. 5 years.
I mean, you've seen the attention span of the new generation. So a lot of coaches are going to have difficulties with that, man, especially coming up. So I'm a little bit scared for the next generation of not just coaches, but human beings for us.
I don't know. Whole other topic, man.
Yeah, plenty of topic. And then, okay, so the last one is the personal training influence. You basically already touched on that, right? The second one that we did.
Yeah, go out as a coach and personal train somebody, or two people or three people or however, and do it for a long period of time, and a lot of insights will open up for you for sure.
Yeah. Gary, I think we're going to have to do a part two, because there's so much more that I wanted to get into, and I think this is a huge topic, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe even for the audience members, let us know if you want a part two, and let us know what topics you guys want covered, because you've talked about player development for the last 10, 15 years, Gary, but, and you have a whole course on how to become a coach, but I think it's a topic that needs to be addressed more. And I think coaches want to hear it too. You know, how can they be, because think about it, if you're a coach and you're listening to this, that's a signal right there that you want to become better, or you're trying to become better and understand more. So a lot more that can be discussed. Really quick though, Gary, somebody messaged me. I promised that I would bring it up on the next podcast, just really quick. He asked us, I think he has his son on a U11 or U12 team. And he said that they're, I don't know what he called it, pre-academy or pre-MLS next, right? The top team and top league in his region. And his frustration is that his coach or the club is telling him that, hey, at this age, we're going to rotate everybody as gold, right? And his thing is like, all right, well, if we're supposedly MLS or pre-MLS next, is this going to develop my kid? Or why is my son playing goalie? If this is supposed to be a high level, why are they putting him in the goal? So I want to get your thoughts on that. I kind of responded to him, and my thing is like, the only time a club says that, like, oh, it's for the development of the kid, it's going to help the players, the only time that they say that, Gary, is when they can't find an actual goalie that wants to be goalie for the team, right? So they have to come up with some type of excuse or some type of reason why this is actually going to benefit the kid. But do you think this should be happening at that age? Because a lot of people might argue for that, Gary, like, oh, they're young, they should learn how to play every single position, you know, yeah, rotate them all in goal. But I guarantee you, if that team or that club had a legit goalie that wanted to play goalie and train goalie every single time, they're not going to rotate him on the field, right? They're going to keep him in the goal. So what are your thoughts on this whole situation? And again, for context, this is a pre-MLS next team. So The guy's like, I know Gary's going to say it's wreck no matter what. This is the best that my son has, the best opportunity. So what are your thoughts, Gary? Yeah.
I thought what you were going to say when you were giving your 2 cents, I thought you were going to say that usually when teams or coaches or clubs do something like this, it's because they actually don't know what the fuck they're doing. And so they're inventing new, good sounding stuff, narratives, where it's all for the kids and rotating positions is good for their development because they get to see different sides of the game. And that is usually a very strong signal that you don't know what the fuck you're doing. You have no philosophy. You have no methodology. You have no proven track record. You have nothing. You're clown world. Okay. And before anybody jumps in and says, oh, well, you know, Feyenoord or Ajax in Holland, you know, at age 10, they rotate all the players. Before anybody says that stuff, completely different conversation, okay? You think that those clubs don't know what the fuck they're doing? Of course they know what they're doing. And there is a whole methodology from cradle to grave over there, and they understand all of it. Here in the States, at some rando MLS Next pre-academy thing, even if it's an MLS franchise itself, this is not Ajax, okay? This is a bunch of Wild West gunslingers who don't know shit, inventing stuff and selling it to the parents. That's what I thought you were going to say. But then, and I believe that, honestly, that is my take, okay? But then when you said that it's because they can't find a keeper, they don't have a keeper, that makes a hell of a lot of sense also. So that might actually be what's happening too. So
yeah,
those are my two gut reactions, Ben.
No, Gary, and I only know that because I fucking had to say those things before too. Like, you know, I'm telling you, like at those ages, like it's very rare when a kid wants to play goalie and actually
totally
goes to goalie training. And so what do you have to tell the parents? They're like, oh, coach, we don't have a goalie. Well, you know, it's going to be beneficial for your kid to get him the goal. And listen, the way I saw it is like, hey, we play possession. We're going to be resetting the ball to the goalie's feet all the time. So he's going to be getting a lot of touches. But dude, if I had a set goalie, like, fuck no, we're not rotating everybody in the goal, dude. No chance.
Totally.
Because then the other problem that you run into is like, and actually this is what this guy said too, is like his kid is the shortest kid on the team. And so when he gets put in the goal, like they just, goals galore, you know? So how can you actually say that you're competitive, right? When you're not giving your chance the best opportunity to win.
Yeah.
You know, I guarantee you on that team, there's probably one kid that's the best at goalie, but they don't put him in every game. It's just every, I don't know, 10 games because they rotate everybody in the goal.
Yeah.
But if they were truly competitive, they'd sit those parents down and say, hey, your son's the best. Like, this kid's going to be goalie going forward, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, dude.
No, I think yours is the proper explanation, honestly speaking. Yeah. But
it could be yours too, you know?
No, I think it's yours, but I mean, if they do have a goalie and they're doing this, it's mine.
Oh man. If they do, and this guy's listening, if they do have a goalie and they're still rotating, run as fast as you can, bro.
No, it's your explanation, Benny, because, well, here's a question for this guy too. Are they doing it also with the other positions? Oh, we're rotating everybody at left back and right back and center mid and center back. Like, are they doing that with the other positions? And honestly, if they are, run for the, well, they might, he not, might not be able to run for the hills because it might be the best thing that there is in this guy's area. So you can't just leave because it might be worse from a talent perspective on another team. So you're kind of stuck. But it's not great, man. It's not great.
Yeah. That's another topic for another day, Gary. Rotating players. Like, do you believe that, like, okay, let's say that your son is on the U11 team. He's 10 years old. Should your son, if he's a left back, should he be playing left back every single game? Or what a lot of people will say, to play devil's advocate, no, at a young age, they need to play every position. He needs to play center mid. He needs to play center back, forward. Is that wrong in your opinion, Gary?
I think that everything is context dependent, Ben. I don't think you should be randomly just rotating players for that reason. Oh, the players should see everything, so we're just going to randomly put it. I think it's context dependent. What does the team need? What does the team need? What does this particular player need or not need? That's what it is. And if you're thinking about giving players the most possible looks in different positions, at most, I would say two or three different positions maximum, you know, throughout the course of a year, maximum, because you need the player to get to a certain level of comfort with a certain position to learn all the other things, to learn the things about football, you know, to learn how to receive a ball and dish a ball, receive a ball, dish a ball, have vision of the game, know how to create space for yourself. You know, if you're a left back, that takes a while for you to settle in and say, okay, I kind of am getting this, so now I'm going to be able to improve as a player. If you don't even let a player settle into a position and then you ship them off to a completely different position too quickly, they're constantly in chaos and constantly confused. That's not a great environment for development, Ben.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Gary, another topic for another day. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but yeah, dude, we're going to have to do a part two. I think I had about 10 more questions for you, bro. So,
okay.
Looking forward to it.
Shameless plug. This is episode 402, and I don't think I've ever in all these episodes ever within the episode said something like, "Hey, we've been talking about coaching development, coaching education. Who are good sources of information? Who are not? Get your ass to 343coaching.com. If you've been listening to us for a long period of time, and you're a coach, and you still have not signed up, what are you doing here? Honestly, no, Benny, if you've listened to us for years on the podcast, because this podcast has been going on for, I don't even know, 6, 7 years now, 10 years. I don't know how long the podcast has been going. It's been going on for a long time. If you've been here for years, consuming our content, reading the articles, following on X, and you still haven't signed up for the coaching education program, what are you still doing here? And you're a coach. It would blow my mind. Am I just entertaining? Am I that entertaining that you just want to come for the entertainment value? Come on, dude, get your ass over there. And if you're a parent who's also been listening to us for a very long time and have a young kid, okay, because if your kid's already 16 years old, like it's game over. Sorry to say that. I'm sure they might have a future somehow, some way in college or whatever. But what I'm going to say next is not for you. The 343 Masterclass, the Parent Education Masterclass, right? If you're a parent, get your ass to 343masterclass.com, fucking open up your wallet, fucking put money where your mouth is, and educate, learn something. It's cool. It's no problem. I just start wondering, Benny's like, what are you doing here? If you've gotten to know us over years and you still don't think that we know what we're talking about, you shouldn't be tuning in.
There you go. 400 episodes later, bro.
It's the first time. Look, in the audio version, I always give an intro and then I run the ads, right? Hey, because that's what sustains us. And by the way, if you're not a coach, you're not a parent, or you're already in the masterclass, you're already a coaching agent, go on YouTube and like and subscribe and send the episodes to your circle, because that also is very helpful.
100%, Gary. Good stuff, my man.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.